warm welcome to the Blue Team Podcast, your weekly unofficial podcast dedicated to all things Peterhead FC. On this week's episode, it's our season review as we look back on the 2022-23 campaign, go through our end of the season award winners, and we'll look ahead to next season. Yes, welcome along to the last episode of the season of the Blue Team Podcast. I am Colin Byers, and with me for the last time this season, Martin Smith. Martin, welcome along. How are you?
Good evening. Yeah, not too bad, thanks. How are you?
Not too bad. Final one of the season. Can you believe it? That's it. I've come to an end already.
It's been a long season for the wrong reasons, but yeah, it's come round pretty quick at the same time as well. So
I know it's going by pretty quick. There's been a lot of. I was going to say a lot of ups and downs, but I think it's more downs than anything else. Usually these things kind of go like peaks and troughs, but we've had a lot of troughs and more than peaks.
Yeah, when you go through the season, you're always expecting a turning point at some point. I think once I got to Christmas time and Davey brought in his guys in January and you realised things still weren't improving. It got to that point, you thought, actually, this could be a really difficult season just across the season. It proved to be the case.
And you know what's weird is that normally when we sort of start the season, there's a few, shall we say, experts out there who will undoubtedly predict that Peterhead will struggle and finish bottom. And normally we're quite quick to kind of bookmark those tweets and then bring them up at the end of the season. It's safe to say I don't think we bookmarked many tweets at the beginning of this season.
I think we did it last year, didn't we? We've seen a few folks saying that Peterhead would get relegated. We bookmarked it. And then once safety was confirmed, we sort of put out our fishing rod, so to speak, and went fishing on Twitter and thought, actually, we survived. This year, yeah. You know where the tweets are, but I'm not really going looking for them because I don't think there's many people that tipped us to avoid relegation. That proved to be the case.
But it was a really weird one because I think even at the very early stages of the season, and we'll go through the season as a whole, but even at the early stages of the season, there wasn't that sort of optimistic feel that we had at the end of last season, going into the very first game of the League Cup, or even in the league game against Airdrie, there wasn't that sort of feeling. We could want something here. It was always that kind of we could really struggle here.
Yeah, I mean, we did the end of season recording last year, and we always thought if we could get a couple of good additions in the squad, keep the core of the team, then we'd have a relatively successful season. And then within a matter of weeks, Simon Ferry left, Gary Fraser left, Scott Brown. It was just almost like a mass exodus, and we struggled to ever recover from it. And, I've touched on it a few times now. You go into the Aberdeen game on the Friday night, you still don't have a goalkeeper registered. And it sort of summed up the strategy last summer. It was sort of scrambling about, trying to get players in last minute, players that hadn't really done much at previous clubs when we were taking them on. And yeah, that season anticipation was never really there this season. And I guess looking back on it now, that's sort of where it all stemmed from. Poor recruitment in the summer. And, as we've said a few times now, we'd never recover from that point onwards.
No, it was almost like a domino effect, as you said. Like once one person left, it was just one person after the other. And you were like, God, we're not got a team here. And we're coming into that Aberdeen game. We had the Dundee game friendly, and there must have been about six or seven trialists for that game, and we only had four players on the bench for the Aberdeen game as well, which was in itself was a story.
Yeah, and as Jordan said last week when we spoke to them, they were turning up to training in January, February, and they're still trialists coming into your training sessions there. So, yeah, the recruitment, I'm sure, is going to be a lot better this season with Ryan and Jordan at the helm than it was last season. And that's the things that we've got to learn from as a club.
So we'll look at the League Cup very quickly. We were drawn against Aberdeen, Raith Rovers, Dumbarton and Stirling Albion. And on paper, it wasn't a bad group, if you think about it, because obviously Stirling Albion and Dumbarton, League Two sides. Dumbarton obviously been relegated the previous year for League One. Raith Rovers had just been promoted from League One into the Championship. And Aberdeen, this is the first time they've been in the League Cup for a few years as well. So they really used to competitive football, if you like, at that stage of the season. So, when the draw was made, you were kind of like, we could be in for a wee shout here for causing a bit of upset. But, four games later, we hadn't even scored a goal in those four games, getting beat. 2-0 away at Aberdeen, 6-0 at Raith, 2-0 against Dumbarton, and then 3-0 doing it at Stirling in the last game. And it just was, that was just the setup for how the rest of the season was going to go.
Yeah, on paper it looked pretty favourable. On the pitch it was an absolute disaster. We weren't at sugarcoat to end the season review. It was a horror show in the cup. Didn't really expect much probably for the Aberdeen game. They sort of strolled at a canter on a beautiful sunny afternoon. But then you were sort of looking more for the Dumbarton and Stirling Albion game to sort of give you a benchmark in the season. Conceded 5 goals, scored none. Never looked like scoring either. I think that was worrying at that time. And that sort of set the catalyst for the season, that scoring goals was always going to be our struggle, you know, and that proved the case.
I think even the Raith game was a bit of an eye-opener, you know, conceding six being there on the Tuesday night or the Wednesday night, whatever it was just a bit of an eye-opener. And I remember Paul Dixon in his post-match saying that that can't happen again, that will never happen again, we need to be better. I mean, that was probably the worst thing he could have said, because immediately the next game he gets himself sent off against Dumbarton.
Yeah, he's one of them players we touched on a few weeks ago that it just never really worked out for him. Obviously, getting sent off, conceding six, he said it would never happen again. He didn't say that he'd be playing, obviously, with the Airdrie result when we conceded seven. So technically he was right, but that sort of performance, it sort of set the precedent how the season would go. There were certain games that, even if we weren't in it last season, that you always felt you were in with a chance. But this season, if we weren't in the game, we just got blown apart. And I think the gulf in quality was pretty apparent. It's been a very competitive League One, apart from the two teams at the bottom. But yeah, the League Cup was an absolute disaster for us.
So some of the arrivals in July early on were Jack Newman, Ola Adeyemo, Cody McLeod, Jamie Redmond, Craig Simpson, and Max Gillis arrived on the Friday before the Airdrie game. So a lot of players were arriving here there now. Jack Newman was signed just before the Aberdeen game and did relatively well, I should say. But we should also point out as well, at this stage, Andy McCarthy and Hamish Ritchie both got injured. Obviously, McCarthy got injured against Dundee, Ritchie against Aberdeen. McCarthy was supposed to be out for 6 weeks. It was October before the end of October before he actually returned. And Ritchie was obviously good for the rest of the season. So, again, a lot of, I wouldn't say excuses was being made, but when you're struggling to bring in players, and I guess two of the players that you would be basing your team round about, i.e. McCarthy and Ritchie, both got out long term, suddenly your plans, if you had any plans, of course, sort of fade away.
Yeah, I think Andy and Hamish are their names that are on your team sheet week in, week out, and to lose them for such a long period of time as well. The fact that they play in a similar sort of position, okay, Hamish is slightly further forward, but they're in the same area of the pitch. It can blow your plans apart, and also if they're going to be long-term, you have to try and recruit them players. Your strategy can change. You're maybe looking at a striker or a wide player, and then you're changing your target. Nay, easy, but you always felt with the contacts that Jim and the board had within the game that it would be positions that you would be able to cover using the loan market as well, but you know that never came to fruition.
And also another departure in July was Martin Johnson, the general manager, who'd been with Peter Reid for about 8 years. And I mentioned that because for two reasons. One, because he was a big supporter of ours and helped us out in the early stages when we started out 4 years ago, and sort of bent over backwards to help us with various things, particularly to get player interviews, etc. But I also think as well, with the amount of changes that's happened off the pitch, this was a big one.
Yeah, and Martin was brilliant for us to start off with. And you've seen the changes happening. There's a lot of players leaving. And you always felt that the structure within the club, the board, the general manager and Jim and Davey being there, that continuity would sort of be the glue that effectively sort of kept everything together. And then once Martin left, Martin does a lot of work behind the scenes that a lot of people probably don't realise how much work goes on behind the scenes. And I think that's testament to how much work Martin did. But once he left, you just seen cracks starting to appear. Nate, everybody might have been pulling in the same direction. And I think that's when things just started to unravel a wee bit. The amount of turnover that we had in the summer, plus your general manager leaving, it's two big areas on and off the pitch to try and recover from.
and his last day was the 2-0 loss in the league opener against Cerdy. You know, again, you look at that game, we didn't really sort of cause them too many problems. 2-0, fairly comfortable for Airdrie in the end.
Yeah, I like many games this season. we struggled, and we never really looked like we were going to cause much damage to them. They sort of won the game at a canter, and that sort of really gave you the clear indication going with the League Cup and your season opener. Okay, it was against Airdrie, decent team, but it was just a catalyst to how things were going to go.
So August, we've brought in more players. Robbie Scullion came in after two successful trial games. Jack Wilkie, Ewan Murray came in on loan from Dundee. Prince Azari came in. Cristiano Kazuka, Ramez Hevzala was also came in as well. But going the other way, Jack Newman was recalled by Dundee United. If you recall, obviously there was a shenanigans with their goalkeeper liking and retweeting Celtic tweets, which obviously didn't go doing too well with the Dundee United supporters, and he was recalled to be, I guess, a second choice keeper.
Yeah, when you're was that the 9-0 game that Dundee United got beat by at Tannadice? Yeah, and the goalkeeper. Yeah, how not to endear yourself to supporters? rule. Yeah, he was recalled. I think Newman would have been a good goalkeeper for us. Okay, very young. But we've seen in previous years how young players can come in and do well for us. And also, it's unfortunate that he went back and we struggled from it.
Yeah, I think he probably would have, for what we saw of him, very briefly in the, three or four games that he did play for us, he was obviously going to be a decent keeper. Results in August, 2-2 against Clyde away from home. We were 2-0 down, so obviously that was a good result. 3-1 away from home, though, to Falkirk. Equalised in half-time, but Conor O'Keefe got sent off in that one. Then we lost 4-1 at home to Queen of the South. Again, took the lead through Max Gillis, 2-2 for him. But again, Queen of the South scored two goals in each half. And then a 5-0 loss away from home to Alloa, in a game where we had no shots on target and were 3-0 down at half-time. So it was a weird sort of start to the season. You know, if you remember back to the Clyde game, we were 2-0 down quite early outdoors, and we thought, ah, here we go. But the guys, they fought back and managed to get themselves back in the game and finish the game 2-2.
Yeah, I think when the season sort of started, you always looked at games like Falkirk, it was always going to be tricky, and you had Airdrie. And then I think the one that sort of really brought it home, with the amount of players at length and the reshuffling that you had coming in, you felt it was going to be a difficult season. But I think the Alloa 5-0 game was probably the one that I looked at and went, ah, we are in a right bit of bother here. Because, as you said, no shots on target away from home. Probably Alloa would be the sort of team that you would think they're going to be in and around mid-table, not really worried too much about relegation, not too bothered about promotion. That's the sort of team you're starting to aim, you know, go back 10 months, that's sort of the team at your benchmark. To lose 5-0 against them with no shots on target, that was probably the moment I thought, okay, you can sort of legislate for Airdrie's and your Falkirk, Queen of South just being relegated. But that was a game for me, I thought, we are in for a right tricky season.
It was always going to be a difficult season because you look at the way the league was, you had two teams dropping down for the championship. You had Dunfermline and Queen of the South, full-time teams. You then had, who came up? It was Kelty and, oh, man. What was the other?
Pass. It's been that long a season.
Kelty and FC Edinburgh. There we go. They both come up. Obviously,
is that what we're calling them? They haven't changed names in the last couple of weeks.
They could be Edinburgh Rangers, but anyway, I reckon.
Controversial.
They came up, so it was always going to be a difficult one. And, you know, if you go off to a slow start this season, you were always going to be sort of dragging behind.
Yeah, these are clubs that you'd expect that they're ambitious enough that they're going to go through the leagues. And they'll hope within the next couple of years that they'll be aiming for promotion. And as you said, if you start off slowly, there's always going to be that gap created. And obviously, that gap, once we'd played Alloa, Clyde were like sort of mid-table. And you didn't think Clyde were the team that would drop doing we as, but also we knew we'd had such a difficult start. And then you sort of looked at your fixtures for, you know, going into October. It didn't get much easier, but you felt that was sort of a month. Because, again, you looked at November, you thought, right, we're going to need to start picking up points and wins. And obviously, there were very few and far between. We only got three all season.
So we started the season by the end of August with four defeats and one draw, which then prompted a open letter from the chairman after the Alawa game at the end of the season, end of the month, I should say, to sort of basically say that he understood fans' frustrations, understood the results weren't good enough, but it was given Jim his full backing, and obviously sort of went on to sort of discuss how difficult recruitment had been during the summertime as well.
Yeah, the recruitment side of things was always going to be difficult. Obviously, we knew the Open Goal Broomhill situation. They were willing to spend money. We just touched on there about Kelty and FC Edinburgh. Whilst these aren't the teams that were, you know, taking the players that we were after, so to speak, they do play a bigger part in the picture of it is more difficult to try and attract players up to Peterhead than it was maybe two, three seasons ago. And then I think the exodus of, you know, likes of Scott Brown, Simon Ferry, they can't be understated either. You know, a player like Simon Ferry being at your club will certainly attract certain players to come up. They're willing to play with him. His coaching methods were well liked. So the fact that you've lost these key figures in your squad as well, some players may be willing to maybe stay south a bit more. You've also got to take into consideration that the COVID side of things, where, you know, the cost of living crisis has now been created, players now want to travel as far north, they've got your fuel supplements, all these little things, you know, play a bigger part. But the recruitment side was always going to be difficult. And I get why the statement came out, but then we're signing players from Holland and everything. So it sort of made a little bit of a mockery of it, because in one sense we're saying it's difficult to recruit players from, you know, this area, and then we're going to sign someone from Holland. Okay, can they play? And never did, but that stand still stands that we were able to do it.
I still think it was strange, a strange move, because I think we spoke about it at the time, but it was a strange one because Jim was coming up for his 11-year anniversary. Everybody sort of thought that it'd be a case of he's got the job for as long as he wants the job kind of thing, and for the chairman to then come out and say, well, no, he's got the full backing of myself and the board was a strange one, because knowing anybody was really questioning Jim at the time. Obviously, there has been a few folk have been saying that maybe it was a time for him to move on, but I don't think it was enough people to sort of justify that kind of statement.
Possibly not. I mean, it's only surmising, but I think they're just trying to put to bed any sort of ill feeling that there maybe was at the time. They're maybe just trying to quash anything that was maybe being said. Social media these days, everything can get taken out of context as well. So it's maybe one of them where he was just trying to, you know, rather than speculation happening, he was just putting a quash on it, saying, no, Jim's got our full back, and realised it was a difficult start. I think the fact that it came in the back of the 5-0 defeat as well, you know, the board, Roger, maybe thought a wee bit like ourselves and a few others that it was going to be a difficult season, but that 5-0 game was maybe the question of, ooh, was maybe going to be more difficult than what we thought.
Yeah, so September, obviously, in a month where the Queen had died as well, obviously we had only two games in the league that month, and then we had the League Challenge Cup game against Elgin, but we managed to bring in Tom Ritchie on loan for Aberdeen. Enoch Wallace-Simby came in as well. You mentioned the Dutchman, Lauren Van Rooy as well. He came in. Michael Hewitt came in, loan as well. And out went Jamie Redmond and Craig Simpson, who were just really here to fill a fill a couple of spaces. But Tom came in, and again, good reputation, good goalkeeper. But you look at likes of Enoch coming in, Loren, who obviously ended up not playing at all for the club. Enoch, it took a long time for his red tape to go through. So although he was announced, it was in against another month or so before he actually played. And Michael Hewitt was another one who came in, did well, but was then recalled by his parent club in January.
Yeah, Tom and Michael coming in were really good signings. It's one of them. Had they been here for the start, okay, it's only two players, but I was impressed by Tom. It was unfortunate that we eventually lost him due to the situation with Joe Lewis at Aberdeen, also the Goodwin sacking as well. Everything sort of, the tawdry side of things sort of meant that Tom was recalled. And Michael actually played well, and that's the reason that he went back to AR and got into their team. So that's where the loan market can be beneficial at both sides, in terms of the club getting their player out on loan, we get the benefit of it, and the player gets, you know, the chance to play the games. It was unfortunate on both occasions that both of them were recalled.
It results in the league, we had one loss and one win. 2-0 loss to Montrose at home. Roland McAllister got sent off in that one. They had a goal in each half despite being down to 10 men for all of the second half, because McAllister was sent off right on right on half time. And then we had the 2-1 win against Kelty, with Conor O'Keefe scoring two goals in that those games, both of which were goal of the season contenders. And again, there was a sending off in that one, but I think a lot of people forget that Kazuka was actually sent off in that game as well, so just before half time in that one. So we played the vast majority of the game with 10 men and still managed to win that game. And I think we looked at that game as, well, we've managed to pick up our first win. We've sort of got that monkey off our back. We've won the game with 10 men against a side who, you know, for the remainder of the season, you would think we would be battling for, you know, safety with. And I think that was possibly the first point in the season where you thought, actually, we're like, okay, we could start building on something here now.
I think the fact that we've gone down to 10 men and, you know, we still won the game, that sort of gave you the hope and the optimism that actually, okay, we've had a really poor start, a really, you know, difficult couple of months, but maybe now with the signings off, you know, Tom Ritchie coming in, Michael Hewitt, the players starting to get a better understanding with each other, you maybe then thought after the Kelty game that actually it's maybe not quite as bad as what it appeared to be, but as we kind of the season went, it was a wee bit of a false dawn.
Yeah, because we were back down with a bump the following week against Elgin in the League Challenge Cup. And you could argue, well, the League Challenge Cup probably isn't a priority, but when you come up against a rival and then you lose in the manner that we did, that's when the sort of warning lights become more apparent.
Yeah, I get the note of the Challenge Cup isn't that important. I think given the way our season had started, you'd have looked to have then, I think we mentioned it at the time in the podcast that Monday, that you'd look to go into the Elgin game, the back of beating Kelty, to hear that springboard of, you know, back-to-back wins, how confidence would be in the cap again, another game of the players gelling. And to bend the performance that we did, compiled the result, Elgin weren't a great last season either, but they weren't in a great position in the league either, if I remember correctly. I think they were bought half of League Two. So it wasn't like they were all flying at the top of League Two and had a good start to the season. They were struggling as well. And yeah, just the manner of the defeat, again, you can crash him back down to earth a week later.
And that's the thing, because we spoke about that. We then obviously looked ahead to the fixtures after that. We then had Dunfermline away, FC Edinburgh away, which was obviously the rearranged game. Falkirk, Queen of the South, Alloa and FC Edinburgh all in that month, which was going to be a massive month for us in October. And coming out into that after a 4-0 victory, 4-0 loss, confidence was going to be shot.
Yeah, you mentioned there Falkirk and Dunfermline. I think at the time, FC Edinburgh were third as well, weren't they, when we went into that game? Because I could be wrong, but I think they had a chance of them beating us to go into second, but joint first. They were that high up and pushing. Yeah, and you looked at that fixture and you thought, based on what we'd seen against Elgin, the way the season had started, you were sort of scratching your head thinking, where's any wins going to come from?
And we went to Dunfermline. Again, we found ourselves 2-0 down. But this time we were 2-0 down with just 3 minutes to go, but somehow managed to get it back to 2-2. And it might have been just one of those where Dunfermline switched off, or it could have been a case of that we was obviously still had that fighting spirit to get back to 2-2.
Probably a bit of both. I think you're 2-0 up at home against a team that's bottom of the table, struggling for any sort of form. Probably complacency for their part. You know, like I said, they're 2-0 up at home, cruising the game with 3 minutes to go. And, you know, you've said it quite a few times over the years to me that 2-0 is quite a precarious lead, because it's that next goal sort of really decides how the game's going to go. 2-1, you become a bit shaky. 3-0, the game's pretty much over. And we got the goal, I think it was like 88th, 89th minute. And then we've also managed to snatch an equaliser at the end. And just shows that bit of hunger and determination. You could get something out of Mace games. It just, you know, it just wasn't there the whole season.
Following that up on the Wednesday night, a 2-0 loss down at FC Edinburgh, two late goals from them, both I think fairly similar on the break, on the counter. Falkirk up here was a 4-0 loss, really poor performance. I think we only had one shot on goal that entire game. I think, to be honest with you, it was one of the better performances that we've seen at Falkirk since obviously we've both been in League One. And then there was a 2-0 loss away from home at Queen of South. And the one thing I would pick up with that one was, despite us actually having a full bench, nine players on the bench, the changes only came after we were 2-0 down, and we only made two. And that's something that a lot of folk were picking up on throughout the season, why we're not using the players on the bench enough.
Yeah, it's one of them that's been labelled a few times now that we didn't use the substitutes probably as much as we could. First time in a long time that we had actually the full complement of being able to, you know, pick from nine substitutions. And I think that was sort of quite a common criticism of Jim at the end, that substitutes weren't really being used, whether that's because he just didn't fancy them or whether he didn't think there were players that could come on and effectively change the game. Only Jim and Davey will know that. Yeah, it was something that was labelled quite a few times that we could and probably should have made changes quicker.
Then we got a 2-0 loss at home to Alawa, and then a 1-1 draw against FC Edinburgh. It was the first goal in five, actually. Jack Brown scoring it. Again, another player sent off. Julian Carr was sent off in that game. And if you remember as well, FC Edinburgh's goal comes from a Tom Ritchie error late on in the game. You look at that.
Is that the one for he's trying to catch it?
Yeah, he's coming for a cross. He should never have been coming for it, yeah. So, you know, you look at that, that's 2 points dropped straight away. You know, if we could build on that, you never know. Obviously, it's all hypothetical. But we end the month with having played 13, winning one game, drawing three, and losing nine goals for, and 32 against. So we were already a long way off of eighth, even at that stage.
Yeah, that's when the league sort of really took shape, was it? And you started to see the teams that were sort of cut adrift at the bottom, you know, transpired. It was Clyde and ourselves. But you went through that month and there wasn't really much positives to take from it. You try and pick out positives for every game. Some games are easier to do than others, but that month was a really difficult one to try and be positive about.
Yeah, it was a big struggle. It was always going to be one of those tricky months with a couple of those, just the way the fixtures work out, and you're always going to hear them coming around. But the biggest month, I guess, was November with the biggest news, which also we'll come on to. We had Hamish Ritchie signing his 1-year deal, even though he was obviously injured, which was a good thing for him and the club. Obviously, that sorts out his future. That's kind of stage as well. Cristiano Kazuko had left. Ola Adeyemo had left as well. So we're two main, if you like, strikers at that time, because Russell McLean wasn't sort of back yet. Had both departed for various reasons. And we'll look at the results that led to Jim McAnally leaving the club. Another loss to Montrose, 3-0 away from home. Two own goals, if you recall, as well, which is just so bizarre. And which turned out to be his last game in charge was the 1-1 draw down at Airdrie. We took the lead. Incredibly, we took the lead doing there, because I think we were sort of expecting the worst in this one. But even worse was that we conceded with about 3 minutes to go and dropped another sort of 2 points.
Yeah, weirdly, a point away to Airdrie isn't a bad result at all. You know, regardless how late we conceded, it was a decent point. Maybe not in the grand scheme of things, that last season just gone, every point's a prisoner. But, you know, a decent point on the road, and probably the timing of the departure probably caught more people by surprise than anything. I don't know, I think sort of left the game at Airdrie and thought, you know what, this could be the end of the management team. You know, you felt you'd gotten a decent point on the road, again, something to build on. A bit of a surprise, you know, just a couple of days later.
Yeah, so just as you said, 2 days later, the big announcement was that Jim McAnally had resigned after over 11 years in charge on the 14th of November. He left, and I think it took a lot of people by surprise. I think it certainly took some of the fans and the players by surprise as well. And I just wonder if you go back to the open letter that it was put out back in October, if it's one of those kind of things that maybe just plants a little seed in his mind, maybe that there's a little bit of doubt in his mind. Maybe he wants to he wants to be the one to sort of walk away, but, you know, without being sacked, if you like. He's the one who's like, okay, I'm going to make the decision, I'm going to walk away for here. But I guess the timing of it was strange because we just got a decent point at Airdrie.
Yeah, you tend to find them if a chairman's or boards will put out the dreaded vote of confidence, and you tend to find that within a couple of matches of a month or so later, then they're out of a job. I don't think the open letter was quite as direct as being a vote of confidence, more just a generalisation from the board and Roger. But yeah, the timing of Jim's departure, it caught me off guard. I wasn't expecting it after, you know, thought the performance was decent at Airdrie, but then, okay, it wasn't the best performance, it certainly wasn't the worst team we've had this season, or up until that point in the season. But I was surprised at the news coming through on the Tuesday that Jim had gone.
It's weird because you look back at the post-match against Montrose, obviously a 3-0 loss in there, and you look back on these kind of things now and you sort of pick up different things. But you look back at it and you think maybe he'd already maybe made his mind up after that game. Maybe he was persuaded just to hang on for another week or maybe just take time to think about it. Because it did seem, I wouldn't say like he was a dejected man, but he just certainly didn't seem as though he was being his usual self.
Probably a bit of frustration. You know, it'd been a difficult summer. A lot of players leaving and a lot of players coming in. And as you said, Christian left, Ola left. You know, these are players that come in the summer and then they're gone already. You know, he'd been here for 11 years, a lot of good things at the club. And it was maybe just one of them that you sort of, you go enough's enough. You know, when that decision was taken, you know, with the board, Roger, Jim, you know, they can all tie in separately. But, you know, everything was decided that he would leave after the Airdrie game. When that decision was made, only these guys will know. And it's hypothetical. If he'd given another month, would things have changed? I think you could see at that point, though, fans, certain elements of the support were just turning ever so slightly. You've seen it becoming more and more apparent on social media. For as much as social media has got its good side, the negatives is also you will see the criticism as well. And, you know, his time was up.
I think it's maybe just a case as well that Jim was maybe more relieved to get rid of those kind of duties, if you like, you know, relieving himself of those duties. Because, as you said, it comes to a point where you just think, no, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah, like I said, you've got to remember, I've been there 11 years, a lot of good work, and it's not just a case of, you know, turning up to training two nights a week and then you've got a match on a Saturday and that's it. You know, these guys are professionals, never once questioned Jim's commitment to the club, and also they don't just work, you know, one afternoon and two nights. They're constantly out trying different things, working on different things, you know, and that takes its toll as well. And you've also got to think of him on a personal level as well.
And Davey Nicks took over as interim for two games, one against Dunfermline, a 2-0 loss. Very comfortable for Dunfermline that game. They were 2-0 up within 20 minutes. And you just felt as though that the confidence was totally drained out of the team and the squad at that stage. And obviously the Scottish Cup tie against Queen's Park. Queen's Park won it 3-0. They had three shots on target and, as I said, they won it 3-0. So again, pretty comfortable for them in the end, and I think any sort of lingering, I don't think Davey would have been really a shoe in for the job, or certainly a one that we might have been considered for the job. I think he's one of those that's probably just as good as an assistant than anything else. But I think any hopes that anybody had of him maybe getting the job ended by those two performances.
Probably. I'm not sure if Davey would have wanted it anyway, you know, only speculating. He'd been a big part of Jim's success over the years as well. Pardon me. It's maybe just a time of he was willing to help the club out in the interim as he did. And then once he decided, you know, that was it for him, he was going to move on. And then the club would go down a new approach. Was probably the right thing for all parties involved.
So with this bottom of the table after 16 games, 11 losses, 38 goals conceded, 10 scored, David Robertson was appointed manager on the 29th of November, and to great fanfare, to a great sort of reception, well well appointed by the club in terms of, you know, making it public, and that was all very well and welcomed. And certainly he said the right things at the right time in terms of he was looking for a local identity again, looking for bringing in, you know, local players, getting that local community feel to the club again. And I think the vast majority were quite excited by the appointment of Davey at the time.
Yeah, I think the appointment was, at the time, it was good. You liked what he had to say. I think the board, obviously, as well, for the few days after, were putting out things as well, and they were happy with the appointment, the route that we were going to go down. Even speaking up to with Davey up until a couple of weeks before he got sacked, he'd said the right things, the local identity, the training movement at Balmoor and everything. Everything was going in the right direction. You felt off the pitch, but as we've said quite a few times, it's a results-driven business. Results didn't improve under Davey. You could argue that performances had actually gotten worse at the tail end. So whilst the appointment was good and welcomed at the time, it never materialised into anything really that great.
And his opening two games, although maybe perhaps out of the frying pan and into the fire kind of thing, a 3-0 loss to Kelty, then obviously the game against Clyde, but it was off because of the weather, and then a 4-0 loss down at FC Edinburgh. So we conceded 7 and not scored. And it was, I think, another sort of wake-up call, not just to him, but for us fans as well.
Yeah, I think Davey said at one point, I can't remember if it was after the Kelty game or after the Edinburgh game, he said he didn't really change anything. He wanted to see what was happening. Mm. And as you said, that would have been a massive wake-up call for him, actually realising what he's come into. It's all very well and good seeing it from an outside point of view, but when you see it in training and, you know, the things that are happening, it turns out that things weren't that good after all. Probably a big wake-up call for everyone.
And it's funny because in those two games, McDonald was sent off against Kelty, and then Russell McLean was sent off against FC Edinburgh. And, you know, by the end of January, both of those two had gone.
Yeah, Davey made it pretty clear he wanted players that were committed to the club and willing to do a lot of work. Whether he felt that these two guys weren't his cup of tea or whether they didn't fit to the system he wanted to play, the style that he wanted to play. You know, these are big lads, they're tall, they're strong. You know, you could argue that they're both very direct players, whether Davey decided to go do a different style of football. At that point, got to remember, this was like tail end December, just into January, so he hadn't been here that long to really decipher if it's a team he was going to go for. But as you said rightly, by the end of January, both players had departed.
And we only had the two games in December, as I said, because one was called off because of the weather, and obviously there was a League Cup Challenge Cup weekend, which obviously, because we got pumped the round before, we obviously didn't get a game. So he technically, by, you know, having been there a month, he'd only seen two games, both of which were heavy defeats. And in that time as well, Max Gillis and Ewan Murray both went back to their parent clubs. Ewan had been injured, had never sort of really got going. Max had done really well. I think he probably would have been one of our standout players had he remained, but got a concussion and never really sort of got back into the side. And at the same time, his first signing was Kevin Joshua before the Edinburgh game, and I think he got a bit of a rude awakening as to how Scottish football can be.
Yeah, I think he did get a very rude awakening and didn't really adapt to the game, you know, very well. You felt that might iron out over the weeks and months to come, but it really didn't happen. Max Gillis, like you, I thought was a really good player. Very attacking-minded, willing to get in the box. Wasn't the tallest lad, but he made a nuisance of himself. And you felt that right back was never an area of concern, you know, looking at the team on paper. You thought, you know, Max and Danny between the two of them would do well. It was just unfortunate he got a concussion and sort of never really got back into the squad and then was obviously recalled as well.
So January, obviously, the transfer window is head open, and we've seen a lot of people coming in. We've seen a lot of people kind of go as well. So some of the ends, Kieran Shanks came in on loan, Leighton Bisland, another one on loan, Daniel Fozu, Glenn Gabriel, Boris Malingua, Eli Ikwa, Joshua Oyenson, Jack McIver, Stuart McKenzie and Jordan Allen all came in over the course of that 1 month. And out went Andy Dow, Russell McLean, Michael Hewitt, he went back to his parent club, so did Tom Ritchie. Andy McDonald left as well. Julian Carr and Hersala both sort of disappeared off the sort of face of the earth because their deals were up. They were only 6 month deals anyway. And there was no sort of no fan favour for them. Hersala hadn't played since the Montrose game. And then Prince Azari was loaned out as well. So we were starting to get a feel of the players that Davey was bringing in. Totally, I guess, going against what he had said, you know, 2 months prior when he was announced as manager.
Yeah, he said that we're going to get like a more local identity. That didn't really materialise in January. I've always got this image of January at Balmour being almost like the Grandpa Simpson gif where he just comes in, he hangs his hat, he turns around and goes back out. That's how I imagine the door at Balmour being, with so many ins and outs. And for a player's point of view, if you can just sort of imagine that you're a player that's been out of the hell season, or even, you know, like Jason Brown or Jordan Brown, the amount of players that you've seen come in and go, a manager change, and then you're trying different styles. And what I appeared to be in January was Davey's going to do a completely different style to what Jim had in the previous couple of seasons. So how difficult must it be to try and get a team to gel together? Because you're almost doing it 6 months later again in January. A brand new team coming in, different players, different backgrounds. And they're also at different levels in terms of their fitness as well. And in the grand scheme of things, it was a pretty much of a shambles, is it?
And results-wise, it wasn't getting any better, really. There was a decent 0-0 against Montrose in the 2nd of January. Intensity was a lot better in that game. We felt Kevin Joshua got man of the match for that. Then the following week, because it was a new year, on the Saturday, we lose 3-0 to Airdrie, 6 minutes to go. It was 0-0, and then we concede three in the last 6 minutes. Again, away from home, Dunfermline 4-0 this time, no shots. Dunfermline just had the 5 on target, managed to score 4 goals. Then the positive one, we got a 1-0 against Clyde. Kieran Shanks with his first goal was obviously the back heeler. First win for Robertson as well. And at that stage, despite how bad our season was going, we moved above Clyde in the league. We moved up to 9th. And that, again, we look at previously the 2-1 against Kelty, we thought maybe that's the catalyst for us to then push on and kick on. This was the one where, right, we've got the win against Clyde, we've gone above them in the league, psychologically we've got the better of them as well, let's now kick on, and that didn't happen.
Yeah, you felt January was quite a big month for us. The performance against Montrose, obviously it was 0-0, and then you mentioned the high intensity against Airdrie. Three of our centre-backs went down with cramp. There was one cross, went right across the face of the six-yard box. We knew for a goal kick, and three of them all went down with cramp at the same time, because I remember we made the comment on it about how much work they'd put in, and then just capitulated the last 5 minutes. And then you get the Clyde result, and you felt the higher intensity, they were working harder for each other, you got the win, and the psychological fact, we left Balmour and we based it, the psychological fact of going from 10th to 9th, you know, going to be underestimated. It sent Clyde to the bottom, and you felt things were maybe just going to start picking up. We still had a week of the transfer market to go as well. You felt that could have been the turning point, but alas, you know, it never materialised.
Yeah, and despite the following week going 1-0 up against the Queen of the South through a Kieran Shanks penalty, and we'll mention a Kieran Shanks penalty later on, we conceded 3 goals in the second half to Queen of the South in a game which, you look back on it now, we probably didn't deserve to go 1-0 up, but we were 1-0 up and we would have probably taken that. But you look to try and get back-to-back results, and it just wasn't happening at all this season.
No, we sort of shot ourselves in the foot, because you felt if the Clyde result, if you could then go and put back-to-back results together, you know, and give you that springboard of just putting Clyde right to the sword and leaving him in 10th, you could then, you know, get a bit of momentum. But again, we never really capitalised it. And any good work that we did, which was few and far between, to be honest, throughout the season, we never followed it up. And that was probably one of many Achilles heels that we had.
In February, another 3 games, 2 losses, both 1-0 away from home. One against Alloa and then one against Clyde, which is obviously going to be a huge one because we lost that with about 8 minutes to go. Could have been a decent point for us. And then we've got a 1-1 against Celtic. Jack Wilkie with his free kick, his first goal, always senior career as well. But again, you go into that half-time 1-1 against Celtic, you look to kind of kick on in the second half, and it just didn't happen for us.
Quite a few times under Davies' era at the club, the game would be finally balanced, and rather than going for it and trying to get the win, we seem to leave ourselves exposed. And nerves probably played a big part in it. You know, you get to the January, February sort of time, and you start looking more at the table and where everything's, because obviously by then the league sort of settled down quite a bit. You get an idea of how your season's gone. But I think at times, rather than rolling the dice and being more positive, even by the team selection towards the end as well, it was more a, how can we avoid defeat rather than we need the 3 points and going to win? You know, and I think that proved quite pivotal as well.
Yeah, that stage we'd played 26. There were only 10 games left of the season. It was turning out to be a two-way battle between us and Clyde, who was going to stay up, who was going to finish ninth. But at that stage as well, he chose to loan two players out. Robbie Scullion went to Beath Juniors. David Wilson, most surprisingly, went to Inverurie on loan. And I still don't sort of fully understand his reasonings for putting David Wilson out on loan, particularly as this kind of stage of the season, we could have really done with his inexperience, because he's obviously still a relatively young guy, but he's played at this level, he knows this league.
Yeah, you see he's a young guy, and he is, but his experience at this level, I think, is crucial. I would rather have David Wilson playing than taking somebody with the highest respect possible, rather than taking somebody for a reserve team or taking in somebody from a background of down south just because he's played for a so-called bigger team. Doesn't mean they can this level of football any better. So I'd rather have kept Davey, especially in the defence. He's been alongside Jason before. I think it could have worked. And I didn't have much complaints about the players. It was, you know, let go in January, whether it be on a free transfer, a transfer deal, or out on loan. But Davey Wilson's one was probably one that you felt could have actually done a job for us.
And I think I wouldn't say backlash, maybe is the wrong word, but I said a lot of people were bemused by that decision. That might have been just one of those decisions that Davey made that maybe made folk realise, nah, he's maybe gone down the wrong alleyway here.
Yeah, I'd probably agree. I think, you know, you'll never please supporters with every decision that you make. But in hindsight, I do wonder whether Davey Robertson would maybe look back on that and go, you know what, that was maybe one I did get wrong, whether he'd admit it or not. Maybe he still feels it was the right decision. There's maybe things in the background that we're now aware of, but I do think that Davey Wilson could certainly have done a job for us.
In March was another huge one in terms of news. Obviously, David Robertson was relieved of his duties. He was sacked on the 21st with a record which stands as played 12, 1-1, drawn 2, lost 9, scored just 3 and conceded 32. And went with on a run with 6 without a win, and you felt it was coming, because obviously, as you said earlier on, results weren't getting any better, but performances as well weren't improving.
No, if anything, they'd gone the opposite way. The performance that you've seen at Falkirk and away to Airdrie, now granted they're bigger teams, they've got more quality, but the performances that you've seen in them games compared to the performances you've seen in the home games against Montrose and Airdrie in January, they were night and day. And you just felt whether the players, I wouldn't say that they'd lost confidence in the manager, but you just felt that there was something underlying that, why we need to get a performance out of these guys. These are guys that had mainly been brought in by Davey as well. So he knew what they were, you know, what players he was bringing in. It's not like you can turn around and say, oh, they weren't his players. Predominantly, they were his players from January sort of time. So, but yeah, I don't think any manager can survive, you know, back-to-back defeats away from home of a 5-0 or 7-0 and be expected to remain in a job.
And that's the thing, you said about it, it's his players, and obviously he was trying to stick with him because he's obviously brought them in. But a lot of us, and a lot of the comments we were getting at that particular time, was that the guys that were playing weren't good enough, and we could see it. And I don't know if he was being, you know, being a stickler about it, or because he brought them, he felt as though he needed to keep playing them. But surely he could have seen that what he was bringing in wasn't any better. If anything, I think a lot of them were of a worse quality than what we had.
Probably stubbornness, I would guess. You know, you've brought in these players that you feel that can do a job for you. You've put them into the team. It's not quite worked too. From the outside point of view, you know, we had many conversations about it off air. There were supporters in about us as well. And you just got that general sense of that we felt that there was better players on the bench and again a game. But there's also that point of, well, how often does this player constantly get to play below par performances before I get a run out? And again, substitutions weren't commonly made as well. Again, a criticism that was sort of thrown at Jim. But you just felt that there was players in that squad more worthy of a starting place than certain players that were playing week in, week out. But because Davey brought them in, I just felt there was a stubbornness to rather change it to for the better of the team. It was more a case of, well, I've brought you in. He's determined to make it work. And it never really did.
And with Ryan Strachan and Jordan Brown took over as interim initially in their first game against Alawa, it was interesting to note that all bar one, I think, of Davies players were all dropped. Maybe Stuart McKenzie would have been one as well that played the previous week. But it was interesting that they've gone in, completely changed the lineup, and then suddenly lost 2-0, but there was a bit more of a passion and a bit more in that performance.
Yeah, I think there was. It was night and day, the performances. I think, from my point of view, it was good to see that there was wholesome changes. I think we've mentioned it a few times that sometimes the change in one or two Disney was work. They went in, they completely changed it for the better. I don't think they just went in and changed it just because they could and it was for the sake of it. You did feel the performance was much better in that game than what we'd seen in the previous month under Davey.
And as we sort of go into March, it was still sort of playing catch up. Clyde had maybe picked up a few, moving into April, they picked up a few decent results, picking up points, which we simply weren't at the end. We didn't pick up enough points where we were in winning positions or from behind, and they were doing that. And we went into April with Queen of the South, FC Edinburgh, Dunfermline, Montrose, Clyde, Kelty, all to play. And I think through April we kept saying, this is a must win, this is a must win. Every game we just went through, this is a must win, this is a must win. And sadly that just didn't happen.
No, April became the must win month, and you know, bar one, it didn't materialise. You sort of looked, when you had that run of fixtures, you looked at Montrose, Clyde and Kelty, and you thought, right, that is the time that you really need to get things together. By hook or by crook, you just needed to get the 3 points in them games, and again, you never got that continuity of victories.
FC Edinburgh provided the only win that month, and it was the third win of the season under the third different management team. Josh Oyneson finally got his first goal for the club as well, and you know, we look back on that game, we could have easily won that game by two or three. A team with a bit more confidence, Keenan Shanks in particular, a bit more confidence about him as well, maybe could have, you know, killed the game off. And again, we go back to maybe that was the catalyst to then go on again, but we had Dunfermline the very next game on the Tuesday night.
Yeah, I think speaking about clutching at straws, the fact that we thought in April that was a catalyst to kick our season on, I think we were kidding ourselves at the same time, were we? There was a lot of positives to take for the Edinburgh game. The criticism is we didn't score a second, that's what I killed the game off. We're hanging on at the end, but like you said, Josh had a really good game. Keenan Shanks could have had a couple as well, played really well. And it was the fact that you sort of come up against Dunfermline in your next game. You could have hoped for an easier game, but like I said, the fact that we're hoping to kick on in April sort of something like that.
Yeah, play them on the Edinburgh on the Saturday, play Dunfermline on Tuesday, then go away from home to Montrose. And we didn't really play well at all doing it, Montrose. Shanks getting a late goal back, but I think with the effort they put in against Edinburgh, and then obviously Dunfermline obviously caught up with them, then you're going into the Clyde game knowing that you really have to win to try and take it to, you know, the second last game and the possibly the last game of the season, and then just being killed by that late goal by Clyde. And even more disappointing was it came after a penalty miss by Shanks as well.
Yeah, the penalty miss was a turning point. We spoke about it the week after about Josh having the ball, Kieran then taking it and then missing it. And then obviously you tend to find if you miss a penalty, it'll come back to haunt you at some point. And obviously the boy scored a cracking goal at the end. He couldn't do it again if he tried it. And I think he hit it brilliantly. He's gone in the the back post and off the post and in. And just that deflation. You've seen by the way they'd celebrated that they knew how big a goal it was. You've seen the way that we were deflated. We'd at least how big a goal it was to concede. The timing of it as well. You felt if there was maybe 10, 15 minutes ago that you could try and mount a winner. But, it was so late. And I think at that point you sort of... You realise that the feeling around the stadium of that was probably it, that the one that got away.
We're not officially relegated, but at that time, going into the final two games, Clyde were 5 points ahead. You knew you had to win the last two away to Kelty, then at home to Falkirk. Yeah, you almost felt as though, although it wasn't official, that was probably it at that time.
Yeah, at least the fact that we had Falkirk in the last day, you sort of felt was always going to be difficult. You maybe fancied your chances at Kelty, a game that we played well in. We knew that Dunfermline were playing Clyde. We'd hoped they would get the win. And had we beaten Clyde, the point swing as well, it would have been firmly in our hands if we got something at Kelty with Dunfermline beating Clyde. But yeah, it wasn't to be, and it was that late goal against Clyde that really stuck the final nail in the coffin.
And Ryan Jordan were given the job on a permanent basis as well. So plenty, and we'll come on to that in a little bit later, but plenty of work going on in the background for next season already between the two of them.
Yeah, they're doing a hell of a lot of work behind the back, the background. They're working night and day to try and get things sorted. They've come out in the media already and said they've identified areas in which we need to be better at. I think it's pretty clear we need to be tighter at the back and get guys in that are creative and and scoring goals, but it's a lot easier said than done.
In our final game, it ended up being a complete dead rubber, but it was 3-1 defeat to Falkirk. Jack McIver with one of the goals of the campaign in a season where we scored very little, to be honest, 19 in total, but it was a it was a strange game, obviously, for both sides. It didn't really mean anything, but in the end, Falkirk did win it. Didn't realise until a few days later that they were celebrating on the pitch. Bizarre behaviour for a team. The fans came onto the pitch after the game. But that's them still going to be stuck in League One again next season, so maybe that's a bit of karma for them.
All their players weren't celebrating with him. That's a wee bit awkward.
Well, that's the thing. You're celebrating a 3-1 win against a team who's already been relegated.
You're celebrating finishing the playoffs against your arch rivals who won the division.
Exactly. It was bizarre. Yeah. And then they get pumped by Airdrie and that's them back again. So good luck to them.
And it's not the worst thing Falkirk's done our season either, is it?
No. So this season finished, played 36, won 3, drawn 7, lost 26. Scored 19 and against 84. It's by any stretch of the imagination, it was a really poor season. And record breaking for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah, it's mental. The fact that we conceded 84 goals and we still took it pretty much down to the second last game.
Yeah.
So if we'd actually held on against Kelty, and gotten a point. Obviously, we knew at that point Dunfermline were winning, so if we had held on for a point, like I said, the fact that you take it in the second last game is a miracle. But yeah, the report card is a really, really disappointing season, and something that cannot be repeated next season.
Oh, if it happens again next season, I think we could be seeing mass murder somewhere. Obviously, the season ended. We'd released our end of season rewards, fourth year we've done it, and obviously, slightly more difficult as we kept saying over the last few weeks about trying to nail down various ones. But for example, end of season, performance of the season, I should say, we're not down to the three wins, surprisingly enough, because that's the other
way it goes.
That's the only ones we could really pick out. I mean, just for argument's sake, we did sort of look at two other games as well. The 0-0 against Montrose, which we said earlier on, it was a good result, good performance. and weirdly, a 2-1 loss. Doing it Kelty, the second last game, again, the performance was there, but it was just beaten off by that sort of killer goal at the end. But I think, in all honesty, you couldn't really have a draw or an Illinois draw or a 2-1 defeat as one of your three candidates for performance of the season.
The way our season was going, it might have had to have been the way it was. Yeah, I mean, the performances were decent in them games, obviously. You want to try and pick the ones that have got the wins, but I think there was, you know, elements of both the Montrose game and the Celtic games that you can pick out positives from in a season that was few and far between with positives.
Yeah, and we went with the Clyde game because, as we said earlier, we felt as though that was it was one of the highlights of David Robertson's tenure. It was one of those results we felt as though that, you know, the performance was there, and then because they then try and kick on and build on that, but it didn't come, unfortunately. And plus, it was against Clyde as well.
Always nice to get a victory against Clyde, is it?
Yeah, few and far between. Hopefully, we'll get a few more of them next season as well.
Hopefully, they come down.
Get relegated as well. Goal of the season, again, very difficult to narrow this one down. Only 19 to choose from. It ended up being a Conor O'Keefe showreel in the end. Both his goals against Kelty. It was also the one down at Clyde away from home as well, was one we'd obviously considered as well. Jack Wilkie's free kick we considered as well, and then we had Jack McIver's one against Falkirk as well. So the two against Kelty for O'Keefe and McIver's one was our top three, and I think we sort of really made the decision quite early on when O'Keefe scored his second against Kelty with that one for the halfway line.
Yeah, it was good. He had two good goals in that game, if you remember the first scene as well. A little dink just outside the 6-yard box as well. Again, as we just touched on, it's one of them games you felt could have been a real turning point in the season. It wasn't it to be, but that goal, you know, his second one of the day was a real cracker.
Young player of the year, again, another one that was difficult because we had so much players coming in and out, and you felt as though it really had to go to players that had been there for the vast majority of the season. Jack Wilkie, Danny Stark and Jack Brown were those three that really had been there all season and been sort of in that bracket to get it. And again, you and I spoke throughout the season, and I think towards the end of the season, even before we sort of really started speaking about what were potentials for Young Player of the Year, was Jack Wilkie was a standout, and I think it was probably the easiest one to pick.
Yeah, who are the categories we've got? I think this was one that we sort of agreed on pretty quickly, very much no deliberation over it. I think Jack's improved as the season's gone on. In a loan spell in which he's grown as a player, but in a defence that has shipped a monumental amount of goals, it'd been very easy for him just to sort of try and shirk away and not really want to take onus on his performances, but he's always been willing to take the ball. You see by the set pieces, he's the first thing to run over and take a bit of responsibility for it. Like I said, I think his performances have gotten better as the season's gone on.
And Danny and Jack, I think unfortunately what went against them was, and they're no through any fault of their own, Danny was sort of in and out of the team in the beginning of the season and played in various positions and, as I said, was in and out of the team. Whereas Jack was in the team at the beginning, but then under Davey seemed to have been nay favoured. And then once he obviously left, he was back into the team again. So perhaps if those two had been consistently in the team, like what Jack had been throughout the season, it might have been a little bit more of a difficult choice for us.
I think if all three of them had played the same amount of games, we'd have been in for a really difficult time deciding. But as you said, the fact that Jack had played pretty much, you know, every game that we've had, and Danny and Jack Brown have sort of been in and out of the squad, it sort of just tipped the balance in his favour.
And player of the year, we had the top three of being Jason Brown, Andy McCarthy and Jack Wilkie. I think it would have been really difficult to give it to Jack, to give him the young player and the player. But Jason and Andy, this one was difficult for us because I think there's arguments for them both, but perhaps maybe what tipped the balance slightly was the fact that Andy McCarthy missed the first 3 or 4 months of the season. And Jason, I know he was injured for the first few games at the start of the season as well through concussion, but again, he gives you a 7 or 8 out of 10 performance every week.
Yeah, a bit like the Danny Strachan and Jack Brown situation when Andy's in and out. Well, he was out of the team for such a long period of time. It is difficult probably to give him that Player of the Year award. I think that, you know, Jason and Andy bring you certain qualities in the squad. They give you that, you know, that leadership, that sort of drive and hunger that you're sort of looking for within your team. And I don't think there'll be too many complaints. I know that, you know, we've conceded a lot of goals at the back. It's maybe the best season for our defence, to put it politely. But I think you look at the other factors as well that Jason's brought. I've spoken about it a few times now, and so have you over the years, that the maturity Jason's brought as well. You've seen the reaction of the defeat at Kilt. He's one of the first players over apologising. Nothing to apologise for. But he's just taken onus on his performances as well. So, yeah, it's been a difficult season for the defence, as it has been the whole team. But I think Jason's a worthy winner.
No, I think, as we said to Mick Kelly game, he's the last person that should be apologising for what had happened. You know, there's players and that were there and maybe no longer there, that it certainly should be the ones that should be putting their hands up. But he certainly shouldn't have been. But he just wears his heart on his sleeve, and that's what you get from him.
Yeah, it's very evident he cares about the club. I think the players that should be disappointed with their performances, you know, they're now no longer at the club. And, you know, I don't think they'll be too big a miss, shall we say.
And that is it for 2022-2023. We can finally put this season to bed. We can now forget about it. We can move on, because it's been just one of those seasons where we just want to forget about it. And we can now do that. We can now move on.
It's been a difficult season. It's been horrendous. Some Mondays haven't a record based on, you know, the 5-0 defeats, the 7-0 defeats, and you try and pick the performances apart. Has been really, really difficult. But I'm pretty confident next season will be a lot more ups than there will be downs.
So before we finish up, we'll just briefly go on to what hopefully will be a successful campaign next season. As we said earlier, a lot of work underway already. Pleased to see that last week the club had put out their retention list, squad list for next season, something that's been missing for a long time, certainly since we've been doing the podcast, but I think for many years before that as well. And that comes from the managers. Jordan had said to us last week when he was on that if there's one thing that he feels that the club doesn't do well is being open and transparent. And we certainly got that. But it not only means it's good for the fans to know what's going on, it's an open for everybody. Everybody knows where they're at, and we're now sort of having a guessing game through the summer.
Yeah, speculation's very good for anyone. In fact, the club have come out, they've put out their retained list, and it's pretty clear. This is the players who have gone, this is the players who are staying, and this is the ones who we're actively trying to keep. And I like what Jordan said, that they're willing to be as open as possible, very transparent. And I think I'll be well reciprocated by the fans.
We've got 11 players under contract at the time of recording, which you wouldn't be surprised to know is a lot better than we were this time last year. I think we only had a handful that were under contract at that time. But when I say a handful, we definitely had a five that were contracted. We still had people that we didn't know if they were staying or not. And that doing this, it rules out any of that speculation.
Yeah, we've got 11 players here now. It's interesting that there's longer term contracts being dished out as well.
Yeah.
You know, we've mentioned previously it's just the 1-year deals, but we seem to be getting away from that, and I'm sure the recruitment drive will be ramped up over the next couple of weeks.
Kevin Joshua, Eli Ikwa, Robbie Scullion, Connor Quiddy McLeod, I should say, Enoch Wolasimbi, Boris Malingwa, Prince Azari, Paul Dixon, Glenn Gabriel and Daniel Fozzi are the 10 that will definitely be not here next season. No surprises there, really. We did sort of touch on a couple of weeks ago who may stay, who may go. Nobody there, really. I don't think we'll be sort of missing too much in a nice way.
No, I think there might... The only question mark some people had was Cody McLeod.
Yeah.
I think Jordan and Ryan are going to go down a slightly different route, reading between the lines of what we've heard and seen. I don't think any of them players would probably be an ideal fit for the two of them.
Yeah, it seems to be we're moving away from that Central Belt, Glasgow, sort of Dundee area kind of way, and I think Cody just sort of comes under that category.
Yeah, they're looking to go in a different direction. They've spoken about it before, that they're a big part of wanting to keep everything localised as well, and having this team identity and a fan connection. And I think we're going to see that over the next, you know, certainly the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, because out of that 11 that we mentioned, only two, Andy McCarthy and Conor O'Keefe, are actually based down south. The rest are all Aberdeen or North. So obviously that's the way that seemed to be going. And pleased to see David Wilson's decided to sign a new contract as well.
Yeah, that just you touched on just two players with a Sentinel belt. Also makes it easier for training as well. You've got to remember at times we were training separately, and then they'd meet up on a Saturday and one half done training separately from the rest of the group, made it very difficult to tie everything in. And yeah, Davey, delighted that he signed, like I said, like we just touched on 20 minutes ago. I don't know, I think putting him out on loan was the best idea the club had, but, you know, delighted it'll be here for next season.
And just Kevin Joshua and Sandy Wood, their futures are still to be decided as we record this. Sandy obviously been ordered, offered a new contract for next season. His work and things like that, circumstances, is slightly different. Josh Owenson, I think we mentioned a few weeks ago, 6 weeks ago, I think he would have been a non-starter for getting a contract, but he's obviously worked his way back into the team, done well, and his performance has maybe justified another contract. Don't know if it's going to be a long-term one, or maybe it's just going to be a one-year, but he's away at hold at the minute, so it could be a few days, a few weeks before he actually makes his decision.
Yeah, that's one of them. The club will just need to be patient. You know, I certainly think, also looking at their club's point of view and for Jordan and Ryan's, if the players made that committed to signing, it certainly wouldn't be hit, you know, losing out on other targets that we're maybe keen on just because we've got an offer on the table for a player. You want guys who are 100% committed, and if that's maybe not quite the case for certain players, then they may move on.
And amazingly, we put this stat out last week as well. Out of the 30 players that between Jim and Davey they brought in, only four will be here definitely next season. Danny Strachan, Conor O'Keefe, Ryan Strachan and Stuart McKenzie, which is an amazing way to look at it.
It's horrendous, yeah. the turnover. You know, okay, different situations, but if you're an employer and you go through that amount of staff in 10 months, you would start to you know, be very concerned. It's like any business, you're trying to run it, and you've got that amount of changes. It's not good for anybody. With the pre-season last summer, you pretty much did it again in January with the amount of players that you'd come in, and now we're doing it again for a third time in a year. But I think the recruitment will be better this time.
And as you said, the retention list went out last week, obviously coming through the club, but obviously that comes through the club's media department as well, which is, as we mentioned before as well, headed up by Dave Reid, who's done a fantastic job, I think, since he's come on board with the club. Certainly, the engagement, the amount of posts has been going up. And I would say as well, it's posts that are relevant as well, whereas previously, I think some of the posts that were done earlier in the season and in previous seasons, it was almost a case of our news is we've got nae news, and that was kind of the way things were done. And I also think as well it helps that you've got somebody who's, you know, fairly local, and again we'll like to use that word local with the but he's up here, he seems to be in and around the club a lot as well, whereas previously the sort of media side of things was done from, you know, a distance.
Yeah, I think the media and the engagement's vastly improved. You can see that by, as you said, the Facebook posts and the Twitter posts. I think there's a lot more interaction, which I think is good. I like the open of the, obviously that comes to the management as well. They're feeding it into the media and the media put it out. And I think it's well reciprocated within the fan base. You see by the comments that everybody's appreciative of knowing things rather than guessing. I think there was times before that you'd go weeks without anything coming out of the club, and then there'd just be a such and such has left or such and such has signed, and there's not really a fanfare about it. You know, we've been through a very difficult season, and you know, a player signing's, you know, a hype to get on board with.
And it's good to see him, you know, going about the club as well. You see him, I mean, he's about 6 feet six as it is. He's not difficult to spot. But you see him, he's going around, he's chatting to the fans before the games and after games and things like that. So that's a good way. And again, I guess it all comes back to the way that Ryan and Jordan want to run things. They want to be a bit more open, a bit more kind of transparent about things as well.
Yeah, I go back to the fan engagement. It's not just a case of, you know, paying punters, turning up and watching a game of football. There's this community spirit within the club. And as I said, everybody's been, you know, it's been a season of hurt this year, and the fact that we've been relegated, the way that the season's gone, and just small interaction with fans, you know, general open questions. If it's something that they can knowingly answer, the club will. If it's something that's not quite common knowledge, then it'll be a case of, well, they didn't came. And but yeah, I think that engagement's good.
Well, as Ken likes to tell us, the administrator in Club Bristolian, if he doesn't know the answer, he will find an answer and let us know.
that's true.
And that's all really are the fans really ask for.
Yeah, it's just being open. You know, you go and support your club. Okay, there are certain things that you'll never get to find out on. But, you know, if you're a paying punter, you want to care if it's happening within your club. And I think the media side is vastly improved within the last, you know, 6-7 months.
So 2023-2024, are we optimistic for having a good season?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think so. I think you can tell by the reaction on Twitter and Facebook and around the club. You know, even after we were relegated, I think you realised that once Jordan and Ryan were a permanent appointment for next season, you've got that optimism of having 11 players here so far. You'd expect at least about another 7, 8, 9 to come in. A season of heart and disappointment, but optimistic for next season.
And I think, as you said, we've got 11 in already. I think if we get another 3 or 4 by the end of the month, takes us up to, you know, 14, 15, 16. You know, and we're going into pre-season in a much better shape than we were last year. And I think, you know, any doubts or any sort of lingering hangovers from this season should really be put to bed, and we look to, you know, look to the future and look to a positive season.
Yeah, I think when the dust settles, relegation and that might not be the worst thing to happen. It's a season where you can reset. I think everybody's on board with the management duo that we've got. I don't think there's been too many complaints out there. You know, these guys are well prepared. We've seen by the training drills and the performances on the park since they've come in, they've gotten better. And I think with a full pre-season under our belt, a full complement within our pre-season squad as well, I think we can all be optimistic of a positive season next season.
And to pick up your point there, I think it's easier to reset in League 2 than it would be to try and reset again in League 1, because what we tried to do this year, obviously we were slow off out of the traps. And, you know, we just got swallowed and spit back out again. But, you know, it might be slightly easier to, as you say, reset, start again, and then look to, you know, be a bit more positive in League 2.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's players within our group that will be there next season that have had a difficult season this season. But we mentioned it a couple of weeks back. You go back to the season previously as well, the January to April time, we only won 4 games. So there's players in there that have only won 7 games in the last 18 months of playing for the club. So, you know, their confidence levels will be short as well. I think it's, like I said, dust will settle. It's not the worst thing to happen. We'll go down, we'll regroup. I think I'm fully behind the management duo. I think their preparation, the hard work it's gone in will pay off. And you just hope you get off to a good start.
So we've got to totally do it again next season, season 5, already and ready to go already.
This will be raring to go. I think it'll be a welcome break for us both. It's been a challenging season, like we said. It has been difficult at times. But yeah, a couple of weeks to reset, just a bit like the players. You take everything in stock, and then we go again for next season.
And that is it for this week, and indeed for the season, as we say goodbye to another campaign. My thanks to Martin Smith for his company over the course of the season. A huge thank you to everyone listening for your continued support, comments and questions. It's been greatly appreciated. Martin and I will be back again for the start of the new season in August. So until then, stay safe and thank you for listening.